It's a great pleasure to see you all here this evening, and a double pleasure, as Mr. Donald Lambie from SES, as you know, is going to talk to us today. I feel it's an enormously important occasion when the SES and the Study Society come closer together, and the importance of having Donald here to speak to us, I don't think can be underestimated at all. As you all know, this is a period of change in the society, and so I think it's only right and proper that at this crucial time for us, we do in fact become closer to the SES. You have on your seat sheets two papers which Donald has produced for you, and I'm sure you'll be talking about them, will you? So what I would like to do now is to ask for a moment's silence, and then I'll light the candle.
It's a great honour to be here. This is the place from which the connection with Sri Shantan under Saraswati began, and we in the school are eternally grateful for that fact, and that we recognize most fully the beginning of that connection being here with the Study Society, and hence it is a great pleasure and a great honor to be here. As was mentioned, there are a couple of things that were on your chairs. One of them is this document. This has nothing to do with the talk this evening, but I thought you might like it. It's a document. We, in the school, each summer celebrate the tradition of teachers, and this brochure was produced earlier this year for that occasion, and it contains a number of beautiful statements from His Holiness, and I hope very much that you will enjoy those later on. So that's one of the things that you have. The other page I'll come to in a moment. When we were discussing what might be the topic for the talk this evening, a suggestion was made it might be a Dvaita philosophy, but that didn't seem to me particularly appropriate because members of the Study Society have been receiving the Advaita philosophy from His Holiness for a very long time indeed, and it wouldn't seem right for me to come and talk about that. But in the absence of that, the thought was an application of that philosophy. So this is it, Advaita philosophy, a practical application, and the practical application that I would like to speak about is in terms of education. His Holiness, in a number of conversations that took place with him, was asked questions about education, and I want to try and show how what he said, what efforts have been made to apply that. So the piece of paper you have are just a few of the statements he made about education, and there's much, much more than this, but I didn't want to trouble you with all of that. But I'd like to go through these statements and try to illustrate how these have been applied in practice. St. James School, which is just down the road here, literally, in Olympia, was begun in 1975, and it was followed by half a dozen schools around the world in schools of philosophy which are associated with the School of Economic Science. So I thought we might begin just show you a few pictures of... this is... the school which is just in Olympia, just round the, literally down the road there. That houses our junior school and senior girls' school. It's about 300 senior girls and 260 junior children. This is more from the school I've just shown you. This is the senior boys' school, which is in Ashford, fairly near Heathrow. It's surprising, we got so close to Heathrow, and it's completely silent because it's not actually on any flight path, so it sounds as though it would be terrible, but it's not at all. These are senior girls from, again, the school just up the road in Olympia here. This is from Johannesburg, also called St. James. This is the John Scotus School in Dublin. That's a junior school and a senior school. More from there. Meditation is quite a feature of these schools, and I'll come on to that a little bit later. This is a tiny school in Stockport, near Manchester. This is from Melbourne, called the Erasmus School, a primary school. And this is from Durban. Also from Durban. Trinidad, each of these schools has its particular characteristics, and the steel drum is the characteristic of Trinidad. This is the John Collett School in Sydney. And the Ficino School in Auckland. This is another school in South Africa, in Cape Town, the Montessori School. And that's it. So I think we'll leave it on that one for you to look at if you get bored looking at me. So I'd like to get down to business, as it were, and look at what, or some of the things that His Holiness said about education, and as I say, the attempts which have been made to apply what he said. So the first statement on your document here, he said, those who spend their energy in uplifting others must put energy in as well through meditation on the way of knowledge. For instance, a teacher who has gone through the education and passed his examination and teaches children of a lower standard, for which he is fully qualified and prepared, has to find time to keep reorientating and study so as to discharge his obligation fully. And following that statement, in the early 1970s, a teachers' group was created, and when St. James School began, all the teachers from that school used to attend the teachers' group. And in particular, what that did was it would meet for 2 weeks each summer, and rather than consider management issues or the latest theory on education, of which there seems always to be an abundance, the emphasis for the teachers' groups has always been the study and penetration of subjects. So history teachers would study history, English teachers would study English, science teachers would study science, and the idea being that teachers essentially would have a love for such subjects, but without the time to, from time to time, go back to them and to penetrate them further, to look at them further, in the hurly-burly of teaching, that love can sometimes become a bit jaded. And it's really most important for teachers, and indeed for pupils as well, that those teachers connect and reconnect as fully as possible with the very best in each of their subjects. So that began in the early 1970s, and the form of it changed. It started off, as I say, with a fortnight, which was quite a long chunk out of teachers' vacation. Later on, it reduced to a week. Now it takes place in Italy. They seem to like to go to exotic places. In the beginning, it was very much only St. James teachers or teachers from some of the schools which I've shown you pictures of. And all of those were members of the School of Economic Science or the associated schools around the world. But more recently, the weeks which have taken place for teachers have been a collection from really all over the place. Nothing to do with any of our schools necessarily, nor necessarily anything to do with the School of Philosophy. And by diverse means, diverse people have come to these events. But really, without exception, the experience is the same, that people, teachers, love to connect again with what they love about their subject. So that was really the endeavor which sprang from this statement from His Holiness. And over the years, there's been an enormous amount of work which has taken place, and textbooks have been written, and all sorts of things. We think that's been a great success, and that it shows the wisdom, the practical wisdom, of what His Holiness said. And all this takes place in the context of meditation, the teaching of His Holiness, the Bible, and Plato. Those would be the basic ingredients. And from there, pretty much all the standard subjects which are taught at school have been studied. So that would be the first statement that we have from His Holiness Sri Shantananda Saraswati. Yes, I might just say in relation to that, and something I might come back to, the national curriculum now requires schools to give attention to spiritual matters in education. And quite a lot of schools, when faced with this requirement, scratch their heads and wonder how on earth they're going to fulfill that requirement. And this has been the principal aim of St. James, to provide a spiritually based education. And so increasingly we find that schools in the Girls' Schools Association, various independent schools associations, are very interested in what St. James has done. And they wouldn't particularly know it, but really what they're getting is what His Holiness has said. So if we take the second statement, thus it remains to the school to see that true knowledge and proper discipline are imparted to the youngsters, with which they would become living examples of a good life in society and would also attract others towards this. The reference to true knowledge in that quotation The attempt to respond to that is from the scriptures, both Eastern and Western, the Bible, the Gita, the Upanishads. I've mentioned Plato and the Greek epics. So that, together with what His Holiness said, would form the core of how that true knowledge may be imparted. And philosophy has always been a subject which has been taught, a weekly subject, in addition to religious education. And in various ways, the schools have tried to convey this true knowledge, sometimes with success, sometimes not with success. It's not the easiest thing to do. But nevertheless, the feeling is that it wouldn't be worth having these schools were they not based on such knowledge. And it's surprising how it works. We had a young man a little while ago now. He was at St. James, and he found himself in the first Gulf War. He became a soldier. And he was there he was in the first Gulf War. And at that time, it was pretty uncertain. And I suppose any soldier awaiting battle gets a bit fearful. And he got a bit fearful and reflective. And he'd been introduced to meditation when he'd been at St. James, but he hadn't meditated at all for probably 10 years. Anyway, into his mind, as clear as a bell, came the mantra, and he was at that time eternally grateful for the meditation. So the true knowledge is responded to in that way. The proper discipline, again, this would come in all sorts of ways. There would be the pausing at the beginning of each class, so that just as we did this evening, children fall still. And I went fairly recently to the boys' school and had lunch there. And if you can imagine a lunch with 300 teenage boys, it's a pretty raucous affair in a hall about this sort of size, maybe a little bit bigger. Anyway, at the beginning of it, they stop, they fall still, they say, grace is said, and it's as still as you could imagine. And then bedlam is unleashed, and then at the end, again, it becomes still. And I think it's a remarkable fact that young boys and young girls can have access, and very easy, natural access, to that stillness. Again, in the context of proper discipline, the disciplines from the traditional virtues, the virtues found in the Gita, the Platonic virtues, wisdom, courage, justice, temperance, and so on. All of these are taught. Now, I should say at this stage, we've had some successes and we've had some failures. And probably in the first 10 years of St. James, some of the teachers were over-enthusiastic and in some cases unreasonably so, and in some cases really quite harsh in their application of discipline. And so a number of pupils were unhappy with this. When the internet came upon us, a number of those pupils combined together on the internet to voice their complaints and unhappiness about what had happened as far as they were concerned at St. James. And this was quite a problem. We had to engage the services of an independent Queen's Council to have an inquiry as to what had happened. And he did indeed find that some of the teachers had acted in a most unreasonable fashion. So that was, from our point of view, not the happiest of chapters. And it was a mistake which was made very much in the early days of St. James. Very different situation now. But the application of the principles of His Holiness is in some ways easier said than done. And yes, some mistakes have been made along the way, and no doubt will continue to be made. The rule I always have about mistakes is that they're not necessarily fatal, but it's a very good idea not to repeat the same ones again. So that's what we're trying to do. So that's the second principle that His Holiness, here at least, outlined. The third quotation you have on your sheet is this. The provision of good material is the first factor. Once the youngsters lay hold of it, it would become a part of their own self and would rarely be lost. The second factor is company. They should be put in the company of such disciplined men who do not easily fail in the conduct of their affairs. Children learn and copy most from real examples. The first sentence, the provision of good material, has been the basis of an enormous amount of work. And some of our teachers would, I think, make the point that in modern education, a great deal of attention is paid to the structure of the education, the form of the education, but not so much attention is paid as to what is actually being taught. And the endeavour has always been the very best material at whatever level. So if I can give you an example, the school in Sydney, you saw a photograph of that, a couple of photographs of that. They each year have a Shakespeare festival, and each year each class performs in or in some way participates in the production of a Shakespearean play. So a child joining that school at the age of 5 and finishing at the age of 11 will by that time have acted in or in some way participated in the production of 6 different Shakespearean plays. And I can only say I wish I'd done that because it becomes part of them. And sometimes teachers have the idea, well, Shakespeare is far too difficult for 5-year-olds. But it's not. It may be too difficult for the teachers of 5-year-olds, but it's not too difficult for the 5-year-olds. And that would be an example of the endeavour to provide the best possible material. At the other end of things, there was a chemistry teacher at the senior boys' school, and he spent a great deal of time researching the great physicists and chemists over the last 100-150 years and what they'd actually said in their own words and collating this in a form which was accessible to teenage boys and teenage girls. And again, I think it's marvellous that children of that age actually get to hear what Einstein had to say and the various great physicists and quantum theorists and so on in their own words. So the provision of good material has been possibly one of the main principles that we've tried to follow. Of course, there can be lots of arguments about what's good, and I suppose we've taken a pretty traditional view of what's good. So we go with Shakespeare, with Homer, with Mozart, Vivaldi, what traditionally would be accepted as being part of the main canon of education. So those are the first three statements. Before I go on to the others, are there any questions anyone would like to ask about what's been said so far?
Two of my grandsons were at school at St. James's in Twickenham, and I think the plays were terrific. They really loved it, and I think my daughter spent a long time making costumes, but they were such fun.
Yes. Well, one of the features of all of these schools has been the singing, the music, very high standard of music, and the drama. And if nothing else, children tend to come out being able to speak extremely well. And it's really most important, because in life, if a person can speak well, a lot of doors open. So the music and drama have always been really important. I went to see the children's school in Trinidad, and I nearly fell over, because walking in, there were all these children with steel drums, and they were playing Mozart on steel drums, and it was fantastic.
Can I ask you... Threw my glass on the floor. As time goes on, the teachers themselves may not have come from philosophy
yes.
school or have had any contact with the knowledge that we've been given. How do you keep that thread? How do you keep that thread going through?
Yes, that's a really pressing question for us. The present head teacher of the boys' school, who's just started in last month, he was appointed. He's not a student in the School of Economic Science, but he was, in fact, with Mr. Marvin next to you, a student in Berkshire at that time, and he was initiated into meditation, and he's most enthusiastic about that. So I'm really delighted about that. I think what teachers find is that they're really quite pleased to come to a place where there is a tradition, where there is an ethos. And it is necessary to try to explain that tradition and that ethos. And some of the teachers who are nothing to do with the School of Philosophy turn out to be the most enthusiastic proponents of the ethos and the tradition of the place. Which one wouldn't necessarily have anticipated. So far, so good. But what it will look like in 30 years' time, in 50 years' time, it's impossible to say. At the moment, the endeavour is to really establish the tradition and the ethos as fully as we possibly can, so that in 50 years' time, we hope, when we're all dead and not here, we hope that it will still be running. I go there every September. It coincides with the birthday of Mr. McLaren, who's regarded as the founder of these schools. And so every year I go and speak about the founder and there's a bust, a statue of him in the school. And so we try and stress the connection with the founder of the school and the principles with which the school was founded, all to try and answer just the question which you have raised. In the end, it depends on there being some people who have the philosophy and the meditation really in their blood. We have quite a lot of teachers now who were former pupils. We have governors who were former pupils. We have a head teacher who is a former pupil. And the former pupils are the best because they've grown up with it. So in the long term, I suspect that's going to be very important for the schools. But you can't just rely on former pupils. You need lots more than that. But if there's a core of people who understand it, if you like, from the inside, then we hope that's going to work.
just one more question. Do you find that those teachers who perhaps haven't received meditation in any way, do they come to receive
some,
meditation?
Yes, some. Yeah. Some do. Mm. Some would come to the meditation, some would come to the philosophy. They may not stay in the philosophy, but they would be interested to try and get a sense of the ideas which with which St. James originated. So that varies quite a lot. Because of the nature of the school, it tends in some cases to attract teachers who do have a strong spiritual inclination. So there's one man who teaches here at the girls' school who was a novitiate Benedictine monk. He didn't take his final vows, but he's from that background, and he was very much attracted to St. James because of its spiritual ethos. So the school tends to, in some cases at least, have that effect. Anyone more?
I'd like to ask you about meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And the age at which you can take it down to, because there's
yes.
a lot of information about meditation in adolescence, but can you take it right down into the primary schools? And if so, how long are the sessions?
I'll come on to meditation, but the short answer to your question is 10. His Holiness was asked about this, what's the youngest that children should be initiated, and he said 10. So they're initiated at the School of Meditation, at that age, and that seems to work very well.
That's excellent. And have you had any people who find the meditation difficult at all?
Lots. Everyone. When they're young, it's easy. When they get a bit older, it's not so easy. Mrs. Lysarak from here used to help with the girls' school, and she would be able to give you chapter and verse more than I can. But really, a lot of boys, it's really very simple when they begin. It's very pure, and the period of meditation might be quite short, but it's as easy as falling off a log. A little bit later, it seems to become a bit more difficult. Not always, but sometimes.
If you're going to talk about meditation, perhaps I should leave my next question, but I think I won't.
Go on.
Can you see a change in the pupils when they take up their meditation
yes.
and practice it?
Yes, it really has an effect, certainly. I'm not sure if I'd be able to describe that effect, but yes, it has an effect. Not all of the children meditate in the way that we've been introduced to meditation, and so you get some who don't take it up, and so that requires some skill on behalf of the head teacher how to handle that. And so they may have a period just of quiet, a period of just reflection on some statement from a scripture or some beautiful painting or some beautiful piece of music. So if they don't meditate, in one way or another, they are encouraged to connect with stillness.
Yes, that's absolutely excellent. Yeah. So they're not in any sense excluded?
No. There was a gentleman behind you.
Hello, good evening. My two children were at St. James's or St. Vedast's
yes.
in the 1970s when it was, looking back, very much in an experimental
yes.
phase. The school was learning to teach, really, to teach in this particular way.
Yes.
They were there for two or three years, they left. And the one thing that I can recollect my son saying when he went to another school, a primary school in Bath, was that, Mum, the children don't listen to the teacher. And I think that was an important thing
yes.
that he learned. He's probably forgotten it now.
Yes.
But that was important. What was encouraging from everything that you've said so far was that at the teacher groups, summer sessions, that you're getting teachers from outside the school
yes.
joining you so that you're spreading the teaching.
Yes.
And I compare that to SES in the 1960s, which had advertisements on the underground. This organization had no street presence at all. But now, if you look around, you've got dozens and dozens of organizations which are turned in the same direction. And I think this is how the teaching of the primary and secondary schools of SES may, that will be the direction they go.
Yes, I think that's right.
In 50 years' time, we won't be here, but there'll be people teaching in the method of SES.
Yes, well, I hope so.
It's encouraging.
You mentioned listening to the teachers. I mean, we do try to encourage pretty basic things, attention, with which this society is well familiar. So when a teacher comes into the class, the children will stand up. At meal times, they serve each other, they say grace, they serve each other. We're a vegetarian organization, both the School of Economic Science and St. James, so all the food is vegetarian. We've had Jamie Oliver down the road here, and he's a great fan of St. James in terms of good quality food. So simple things, like paying attention, like being respectful, serving each other, the simple things go such a long way. They really do.
The other thing that my son said about serving each other was, if you weren't getting served, you gave the fella next to you a kick under
the
table.
That's right, yes. Yeah, we still do that, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it was pretty experimental in those days at St. Vegist, and it wasn't ideal, but out of the experiment came my wife. I'll move on. The fourth statement that you have here, His Holiness quoted a traditional Sanskrit verse, which is in italics. Up to the age of 5, treat the child with love and play. From 5 to 16, put him under discipline, and afterwards treat him like a friend. And His Holiness went on, the child is a tender object. For 5 years, save him from any pressure on his mind or body, and feed him with love and affection. All that he needs to be taught, he should get through play and love. He will respond easily to love. From 5 to 10, his capacity to acquire simple knowledge is great. If I can just pause there, at St. James, they do learn quite a lot by rote. It sounds very old-fashioned in this day and age, but learning by heart, I still remember things that I learnt by heart, and, for example, your times tables, I don't know if that's commonly done now, but we've very much found what His Holiness said there is right. From 5 to 10, his capacity to acquire simple knowledge is great. He would easily take whatever is offered. The simpler the teaching, the better. From 10 years to 16, there is a rise in mental activity, and he would learn to relate things and find out the causes of things. After the age of 16, he should be treated as a friend. He would not like orders, but needs advice and counsel. And in a way, it's rather difficult to talk about that quotation, because that's the whole of the St. James education from 5 up to 18 in those few statements, and how that has been applied is too sort of complex in a way, too detailed to try and go into. But it's been marvellous to have the principles to guide the teachers and to guide the education. And again, this statement here, in fact, it's a fuller statement, that's a little bit of a précis of the statement, has been really invaluable at every stage from, as I say, 5 to 18. I might just mention one aspect of things in this context. Children are very fortunate. They get taken to the most wonderful spiritual places. So in this country, some of the great cathedrals, They have an excellent trip up to Northumberland, where they go to Durham and Holy Island. They go to Chartres Cathedral. Later on in the senior schools, they go to Delphi, to Florence, and taking children to these spiritual centres has proved to be excellent. They do quite a lot of preparation before they go, learning about wherever it is, wherever the destination is going to be, and then taken round and given very good tours and guidance when they're there. And the feeling is amongst the teachers that when children are taken to these sacred or holy places, it makes a deep connection. And that connection can be really quite long-lasting. So that would be one aspect of the education. Number five, the penultimate quotation that you have, education and company are met in the home, school, and society. If all have the same point of view, you produce a unified man, otherwise a mixed up, confused, and vigorless being. And I think any of our teachers will say that the problems which they experience where children come from broken families and this sort of thing are immense. Whereas if you have a strong family, and if a family understands what the education of the school is about and is consistent and delivering the same basic message, then it's a much, much better situation. So when these schools started, nearly all of the children were members of the School of Economic Science. I say their parents were members. And so it pretty much was the case that the day school and the family were delivering the same message. That's very much not the case now. I would estimate about 10% of the children come from parents who are students in the school. So the great majority of children are from parents who are nothing to do with the school. And so this has necessitated a great deal of effort on behalf of the head teachers and the other teachers to try to convey to parents what it is that St. James is doing, what the principles are, what the practice is, how they're trying to apply those principles, and just so the parents understand what the school is about. So in a way, it's a case of having not only to educate the children, but in some measure at least educating the parents in what the school is about. I haven't mentioned Sanskrit. Sanskrit is a peculiarity which the school has taken to its heart, both the School of Economic Science and St. James. And so we teach Sanskrit as well as Greek and Latin. There's always been a strong emphasis on the classical languages. And Sanskrit is a pretty odd subject, pretty unusual subject for a school to teach. And the teachers responded to that by recognizing that if you're going to teach an unusual subject, you better teach it extremely well. So they've been extraordinarily energetic. And whenever the inspectors come to St. James, they really love Sanskrit. It's one of the things they nearly always highlight in their reports. And so that's what gets given to the children. And at the same time, there's a group for parents of children who, for various reasons, are attracted to, and so we have a group of parents learning Sanskrit as well. Anyway, that would be the minority, but with all of the parents, there's quite a concerted effort to try to tell them what it is the school is about. And pretty much, on average, I would say the parents understand that and recognize that. Otherwise, they wouldn't be sending their children there. Because what His Holiness said is undoubtedly true. If you've got one message from the school and another message from home and a third message from society, the child is going to end up confused. At every stage, we have found what His Holiness has said to be absolutely accurate and true. So the last quotation on the sheets that you have relates to meditation. Children have tender minds and hearts. If they happen to see meditation being practiced, they will naturally benefit from the peaceful spiritual act and its environment. Parents who meditate automatically nourish their children with necessary spiritual environment. Later on, when these children are grown up, they will request to participate in meditation, which should keep them free from physical, mental, and emotional ailments. So rather than me talk about it, there was a section on BBC Radio 4 earlier this year on Woman's Hour, where Woman's Hour came to St. James here, up the road in Olympia, and spoke to three or four girls about meditation. And I thought you might like to hear what the girls had to say about meditation. So can we do that?
Next term, pupils in years 11 and 13 will take exams that could determine the rest of their lives. Now, for some, it's a tough time, of course, of hard work, long hours and huge stress. Others don't seem to feel the pressure at all, or maybe do very much work at all. A private school in West London, St James's, uses meditation to help schoolchildren cope with their exams. Indeed, meditation is central to the entire school's ethos, and pupils meditate there at assembly every single morning. Well, Milena, Roshni and Florence told our reporter Henrietta Harrison how it really helps them focus their minds.
Just check for yourselves that your backs are straight and heads up. Simply listen to the music and then focus the attention in meditation.
I found that meditations especially helped me from about this year, year 11, September, October. And I thought, you know, I've got GCSEs, I need to de-stress, so, you know, why not give it a shot? For me, it's about focusing my mind because I have trouble with being able to focus all my attention on what I'm doing rather than getting distracted or, you know, daydreaming or whatever.
It is just an amazing tool to be able to sort of escape and forget, but in a positive way, not sort of just to run away from a problem, but to help with it and relax yourself. And the simplicity of it really is just incredible for doing that, because it's not something difficult to do, it's easy.
And how does it help you?
Particularly with school, obviously. I have my A-levels now, and it's a lot about independent learning, so it builds up a lot of stress for you, because it's not just your teachers sort of telling you what to do now. You have to take a lot on board yourself, which can be extremely overwhelming from GCSE to A-level. So really, it just helps just to for you to compose yourself and just to relax, really.
When I meditate, I concentrate on the third eye in the middle of my forehead, while chanting the mantra, and being able to focus all my energy on a specific point helps me put that into practice while I'm doing my work.
Would you say it helps you in other aspects of your life, and what are they?
It helps me often with friendships, because I don't just meditate just clearing your mind, I also meditate on problems. So I sit down and think about it for a while with a clear mind. And so things like friendship problems, how I'm going to sort out what I'm going to do in the week, all of these, to get through your difficulties, you need a fresh mind.
Do you think it's a hard practice to convey to some people, to explain what it is?
I think it is, especially with people our age. There's this lot of
prejudice towards you on the floor with your legs crossed, levitating or something like that. And I think they don't realise the simplicity of it. And I think people our age need to appreciate it more because it is an easy thing to do and it's not bizarre.
Are you ever embarrassed to say that you do it?
Not at all. I never get embarrassed about things like that. It's just the kind of person I am. But I think it's a perfectly good thing and I'm very glad that I've come across it, that I came to this school and found meditation, because I think it's something everyone should do.
What about you? Do you ever find it hard to explain what it is to, say, people that don't really know about it or don't really practice it?
It is hard. And I have a lot of friends outside of school, and if ever I have to mention it, I sort of mention it like this. Oh, well, yeah, we're meditating at school. No, you don't need to know about that. But sometimes you do have to explain, and people find it really weird. They're like, because it's such a new thing. And they're like, oh, you meditate? And you have to say, yeah. And it's cool, and I like it, and it's really helpful. But it is really hard to explain. It takes courage.
And together speak the prayer for the welfare of all. May all be happy.
May all be happy. May all be without disease. May all creatures have well-being, and none be in misery of any kind.
Iti. Om Paramatmane Namah.
Iti Om Paramatmane Namah.
I think they're the most amazingly articulate advocates for meditation. That's at the heart of the education, and that's the meditation which has been received from His Holiness. So that's been a great thing for the schools. So those are some of the ways in which efforts have been made to apply what Sri Shantananda Saraswati said about education. And it's an ongoing matter. The schools now are completely different from 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even 2 years ago. They continuously develop, and we want to try and ensure that they do continue to develop, but nevertheless that they develop having at their heart the principles of education which we have been discussing. The various school inspection reports are all very complimentary. I'll just read you some of the statements from the junior school. The daily times spent in quiet reflection stand the pupils in good stead for future life. The pupils' personal development is excellent, as is their spiritual, moral, social, and cultural development. And from the senior boys, the spiritual, moral, social, and cultural development of the pupils is excellent. It fully supports the school's aim of a holistic education. Pupils develop excellent spiritual awareness from their involvement in music, art, drama, and quiet time. And the senior girls, the original belief in the importance of studying philosophy alongside the best of traditional British education underpins the ethos of the school. The intention is to inspire an admiration for wisdom together with an appreciation of the essential part it plays in discovering how to live happily, freely, and in a spirit of unity. So those were the comments I had intended to make, and in a way all of this has sprung from what has happened in this room a long time ago, but I think it's a marvellous testament to the work of a great many people. So any more questions on any of that or other points?
This partly aligns... Oh, there he's turned up. Is this one working all right? Yes.
It seems all right.
It partly aligns with what my friend behind asked, that the... I can't remember what the phrase you used, but the essential spirit behind what's taught here and at the SES is, seems to me now at large in the common life world, but also more surprisingly in some of the formal religious institutions. I was with a group at Chartres Cathedral, and two ladies, nothing to do with us, heard me and my wife speaking. And pulled a table over and joined in. And we got into quite a deep conversation, and I then took them around to see some of the sculpture,
yes,
giving them the interpretations that I give, which are derived on the essential spirit,
yes,
of the work of this house. And I said to them, I hope I haven't said anything that's offended you. They didn't show any sign of being offended. They then revealed that they were actually religious. In other words, they were members of some Catholic order, but in plain clothes, but not offended at all at hearing my possibly bizarre explanation. But so things are more at large,
yes,
than they used to be.
Yes, I'm sure that's right in many ways, yes. Yes, thank you. The lady here.
I was just wondering whether you get inquiries from other schools and whether you actually go out to visit other schools.
Yes, we do. A little while ago, another organisation was set up called the Education Renaissance Trust, very much on the same principles, and they've done lots of inset days at various schools. They've had conferences and meetings for teachers. So in that sort of way, that does happen, yes. And the sort of thing which happens is sometimes teachers become governors of other schools. So one of our teachers is a governor of a school, I think somewhere in Kent. So quite a lot gets introduced in that sort of way as well. Yes.
Really? Yes.
So some of the teachers from that school came on the recent teachers group meeting in Italy last summer.
Yes.
So it works in all sorts of ways which you can't necessarily anticipate.
Thank you.
At the end of Dr. Rose's life, he had a meeting which I didn't attend, but at this meeting he said, "We have been over complicating things. What we need now is simplicity. The simpler the teaching, the better."
Yes.
Could you comment on the role of simplicity, please, in our lives?
Father of Mr. Leon McLaren, Mr. Andrew McLaren, used to say with some vigour, "Truth is always simple." And certainly in my life, I've always found that to be the case. I used to practice as a barrister, and very often one would, in legal cases, be presented with experts' reports. And what I used to find is that a good expert would always be able to explain his report to a layman, namely to me. And a bad expert couldn't explain his report. So anything should be explicable. And anything which has as its basis simplicity is explicable. If it has as its basis confusion, then it's not very explicable. I think the Advaita teaching is the supreme example of simplicity, but it's a simplicity which is so profound that it's sometimes elusive, because our minds sometimes are not as simple as that teaching.
at its best, we can come home to simplicity and rest in simplicity.
Yes, indeed. We have a quotation in our early parts from Einstein, who said, "Everything should be made as simple as possible, but no simpler."
Let me just ask you a question.
Yes.
I came to St. James's, and I was speaking to the boys there about near-death experiences. And it was an amazingly interesting day. They were, as you say, extremely attentive. They also asked very good and deep penetrating questions, and I was very impressed with the whole atmosphere of the school. Now, are the St. James's boys, where do they come in the league tables?
The St. James's girls come higher.
Yes, I'm afraid girls always do.
So it varies year by year. St. James girls sometimes have been really quite pretty close to the top. It just depends on the year in question. The boys are there in the league tables. They're sort of midway. They're in what I would call a respectable position. One of the features of St. James is that it's pretty comprehensive, so there isn't really an entrance exam. So if you go to St. Paul's up the road here, you've got to be proven to be pretty bright to get in there in the first place. St. James has a wide range of abilities. And in the league tables, they do pretty well.
Of course, all the kids, or most of the kids, would be meditating, and as Ashank Visharia said, you get an emotionally stable and a healthy population if you meditate. Now, is there any evidence that the St. James's pupils are in fact freer from infections and healthier than in any other school?
I'm not sure it would be so easy to produce a scientific paper on that basis, Dr. Fenwick. I think I know a lot of them, and yes, they're just excellent. And but that's an anecdotal response,
yes.
Really.
Well, I think it was a sort of anecdotal question. And emotionally stable because they're all going through adolescence?
Well, I mean, that's a very mixed affair. So the girls, they would have every problem that every school has. And some of the problems are really quite difficult. So you would get self-harming, you would get all sorts of difficulties, anorexia, bulimia, the lot. So we can't claim to be immune from those problems. But I think they're extremely well dealt with, and I suspect that the emotional and spiritual foundation which they have provides the basis to overcome those problems a lot more successfully than otherwise would be the case.
I'm sure that must be so. Any other questions?
I would just say that my daughter has just finished at St. James's, and she's doing a gap year now. And it's certainly my experience of her friends that they were essentially very mature, very well balanced, very open, and yet entirely natural and normal. And that's my observation of my daughter's peer group.
And listening to those girls speak on the audio clip, I would very much support what you say. There was another gentleman here, yes.
Thank you. What I take from this evening, Mr. Lambie, is the growth and the expression of the original vision. I'm really impressed from the early days that I did see some of firsthand, when pupils were in the SES buildings. Just in terms of like the material, you know, raising so much money to acquire all these buildings is an achievement in itself, and that's a lesson for this society, if ever there were one. But to go from, in just a short space of time really, just a few years from those early days to what you've shown us tonight, I think is remarkable, and it's a really big lesson in how a vision can be realised.
Yes. Yes, and there have been people who've been amazingly hardworking to fulfil that. But again, I would stress, and this is the whole point of the talk, that really everything is based on what His Holiness has said. And we, as I said before, have found that the practical wisdom of the Advaita philosophy, as he has given it to us, is marvellous. And you, if you follow it, you can't go wrong. You go wrong if you don't quite follow it. It's been wonderful.
I was aware slightly of St. James's and the wonderful achievements mm-hmm. you've managed there. I hadn't realised quite what an international network there is. To what extent is that centrally organised, financed, or is it a loose federation? And how do you keep up the standards yes. of teaching and spirituality around the world?
It's not centrally organised. It is a federation. It's not certainly not centrally funded. The head teachers meet together, so about every 2 years the head teachers would come together, and that's the best thing. They love being together, studying together, meditating together, being together, and that's what keeps it together. We, Olympia here, we run teacher training courses, so if one of these schools from overseas wants to send a teacher to get some training, or indeed teachers from nothing to do with us, some teachers from schools in Africa come to us, but we try and do some teacher training here in London for some of the teachers. All of the day schools are very closely associated with the schools of philosophy, so that provides a common thread. So they're all different, and yet really quite strongly united. It's a bit like the Commonwealth. Yes? Yes?
This is a slight digression in the sense that I was very impressed by Satish Kumar's small school at Heartland, where he started with just any children who came, who couldn't get into other schools, anybody, gypsies, anybody. And the first thing they did was to light a fire to have warmth. It was a tiny school. Mm-hmm. And then gradually he used to get people to come and talk. For instance, Francis Leach would come and talk about pottery and show them his pots and how he made them, but also talk about how he marketed them. And the whole business. Same with somebody would have to come and read a story, which they would have to tell, not read. And then the second part would probably be a Dan, Jiu-Jitsu Dan, coming and talking about his mm-hmm. things. And it was the mixture of the practical and the knowledge.
Yes.
Which was so impressive, because so many schools haven't got that practicability.
No. Yes, it's very interesting, isn't it?
It's
Is that school still going?
Well, no, because they've grown up.
Right.
It started. Right. He started for his young children. Right. I think it may be still going. I don't know. They had terrible trouble with the other schools in the local
yes.
area.
Yeah. Well, we've had one or two schools not succeed. One or two schools have had to close down because they have to have a sufficient number to be sustainable. And that's very disappointing when that's happened. It's happened twice. but you can't guarantee a school's going to be successful in the long run.
I think it's the practicality of education as well as the knowledge of the being.
Yes, very much. Yes, thank you. Yes?
The gentleman behind me spoke about the ability with which SES seems to raise a lot of money. And one big difference I noticed between SES and the Study Society is the issue of land and land value. And I would think it'd be quite useful if the management of Collett did parts 1, 2, 3 economics at SES.
I'm not sure I can comment on that suggestion.
Back off.
I mean, we've been very lucky. The boys' school, we got a place in Twickenham. And at that stage, it wasn't such a lot of money. And there were one or two very generous people who helped. Then the prices went up and the property in Ashford came along, and it was in a terrible state. And that was bought and refurbished and the other building sold. And it sort of goes by a wing and a prayer, really. But somehow or other it seems to work out. Yes.
My wife was a teacher. She's retired now, in a little school in part of Ealing, near where we lived. The school's closed down now, with the proprietors having departed. But it was said to be a Christian school, and one set of parents who came along, this was said to them: "We are a Christian," because they were Sikhs or something other. "We are a Christian school." "Yes, we know that. We want our daughter to be educated in a moral background." Mm-hmm. "We will teach her our religion." Mm-hmm. And at least a couple of girls from that school went to St. James's.
Right.
And they it must have been, this was in rather an Asian part of Ealing, and so they were probably of a Vedantic background. But they wouldn't have, as Colin, my wife, said, they didn't know the background, but they were just impressed with the feel.
Yes.
And probably kept that, "Well, we'll teach her our religion."
We've always had a fair number of Indian children because of the meditation and the Sanskrit and the Vedanta. But they respond to the Christianity very well. That's not a problem, not at all. We have children for every religion imaginable, some I've never heard of.
I thought you would.
Yeah. How are we doing, Dr. Fenwick?
We're doing very well. I'd like to ask, how do you see the schools continuing? You've just touched on that briefly.
Well, they seem to go from strength to strength. Certainly in this country, certainly in London, the schools overseas, at the moment, a number of them are stuck at about 110, 115 pupils, and they need to be 140 or 150 pupils. Because the extra 30 makes all the difference in terms of money, and you can't get away from money. It's got to work financially. So most of those schools are not quite in the position where I'd say they are fully established. I think the school in Sydney is, but the others are in the process of establishing. Here, I think the schools are very established. They all have their own premises, and they do very well. They're completely recognised in the educational world. And the hope is they'll go from strength to strength. We want St. James to be here in 500 years' time. And we want it to be providing the best possible education for generation after generation of people in this country and indeed everywhere in the world. And we're doing everything we possibly can to lay the foundations for that.
Well, thank you very much. If there... Okay, should we make this the last question?
I just wanted to say thank you very much for explaining the teaching. I just want to say this is a very old tradition. It comes from the Vedic Vedanta. This is why the children there, in Brahmin children, were sent called Brahmacharyas, the Brahmachari.
Yes.
Which was the teaching based on generally what you have covered. So I just wanted to know the people to know that this is a very old tradition. It comes from there. And in this tradition, when they got the past the age of 16, they were given the sacred thread.
Yes.
This is why it was from. And that is the time the seed of Advaita was sown, because they realized we are all, we are the same. And we are the one with everything. There is no two. So the trouble was, I knew Mr. McLaren, because the school was started for adults. So it was a very difficult, as a householder, when we all joined, we were householders. So it was a very difficult to do, because we didn't. But the way you have tackled is absolutely marvelous. And thank you.
The idea that Mr. McLaren had with St. James was to provide children with all that was going to be necessary so that they may fully realize the self in their lifetime. So that was his idea. And it's very much based on the tradition which you refer to.
Well, let me thank you very, very much indeed for coming here. It's been a great pleasure personally.
Thank you.
To see you here and to have you address the society, and a great pleasure for the society as well. I think it's an enormously important occasion because we both have common teachings. Not only that, we have common members. For example, my portal onto spirituality was in fact through SES, or should I say the London Tube Trains, and yes. Then SES. So it's enormously important for me. And I very much hope that we can, in fact, continue together, because we have much to learn from each other. Already we're being sent to economics classes. And I'm sure there are going to be other things we could learn. I tried to bring in one thing which you do so well, and that is discipline within your groups. You may remember when I came to speak to the society, everybody stood up when you came into the room, and I suggested to the house that they all might like to speak, to stand up when any member of the management committee came into the room. I'm afraid that wasn't received as being entirely appropriate for the house. We're more easy, they said. I was also, you may remember, given by you for Collett House a copy of your record from His Holiness. Now, we're absolutely welded together in terms of the meditation and in terms of the common teaching which we have. And I felt it would only be appropriate if the society returned the gift to you by giving you a copy of our record.
That's most generous, thank you.
And so I'd like to, I'm not going to carry all 10 volumes of it, but I have one nicely wrapped with a bow. Which
thank
is
you very much indeed.
It's symbolic.
Thank you.
And I very much hope that it will be a source of inspiration to you all, as your record
is being to us. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, that's a wonderful gift. Thank you very much. And I entirely concur with the statements that you've made. It seems to me that the School of Meditation and the Study Society are very much sister organizations. We each have our own origins and traditions, but what is common to us is very much greater than what is different. And I think we owe it to His Holiness to work together in a unified, intelligent, creative way. So thank you very much.
Great pleasure. And I hope that the vision of His Holiness for us all is something which we'll be able to manifest. So thank you.
Thank you.